Hello, welcome to The Affairs Current. My name is Coda Vance, your host as always. Our email is theaffairscurrent@gmail.com. Our blog, The Affairs Current, at blogs.blogspot.com, where we have everything, links, everything we talk about on this episode on the most auspicious day at the end of August of 2019, the most, I don't know what you would call this summer, a very long, hot, dragging on summer. And at the end of the summer, as we always do, a little later than we usually like to do this year, but nevertheless, we do have a commitment to you that we will at least try to get this in every year. It's our half-year music review, and who do I have here with me to discuss this? Okay, right on. And so I guess I want to start with maybe a couple of general thoughts about the music this year. I think kind of similarly to when I talked with Edward about the film, films this year, at least at the half-year mark, this has been, in my opinion, kind of a weaker year than previous ones that we've talked about on this podcast. I had, you know, there were some albums that I came into the year really, really looking forward to, and then, you know, for whatever reason, not to say that they were necessarily bad, but they didn't really stick in my mind so much as we were coming through. Like, you know, I had, I remember when we were talking about at the end of last year about, you know, what are we anticipating in 2019, you know, we talked about things like Vampire Weekend, we talked about things like the new Bon Iver. And, you know, I think you'll see as my in my list and the New National as well, I think you'll see in my list that, you know, even though I don't necessarily think any of those bands produced a per se bad record this year, they weren't necessarily up to the quality of their previous releases. And then kind of similarly, you know, there were a few albums that I felt got a little bit overhyped, or a little bit, you know, I came in with certain expectations and maybe they weren't met. And I will be honest that it was a little bit of a struggle, like, getting it to five on my list in terms of five that I feel really good about. I would still say that even a couple of them on there I don't think are necessarily going to be, like, career-defining masterpieces. But they nevertheless, you know, did something interesting, or, you know, the good parts of it were really, really high points. I do feel that there were definitely some strong tracks this year, and we'll get into that. But yeah, so a bit of a weaker year so far this year to me, although we do have, like, some more stuff coming out, hopefully at the end of the year, that might balance it out a little bit more. I don't know if you have any particular general thoughts before we get started. Mm-hmm. For sure. And I do agree with you that part of this is due to sort of changes in the way that music is being distributed, with more things not necessarily coming out in that traditional album sort of format, and more acts like doing these kind of one-offs or shorter EPs or things like that. So, you know, to a certain degree, maybe the format that we've chosen to discuss this in, maybe it's not necessarily the best one for fitting in these things. But at the same time, you know, we are talking about, like you said, some going concerns who were putting out, you know, LP album-length projects that I don't necessarily think. And it's like you said, I don't even think that they're necessarily bad per se, or that they were, like, unpleasant to listen to or anything like that. Like, there wasn't anything like an equivalent of, like, an Arcade Fire or Everything Now, where I think, like, no, this is actually bad. Here this year, it's more just like some things that were kind of, they were pleasant while they were on, but was I coming back to them 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later? Not necessarily. But we'll get into that as we go forward. So let's get into the tracks first. So do you have any honorable mentions in your tracks or no? I do have one brief track that I want to give a little bit of a quick shout out to. And the reason it's an honorable mention is because it's a cover, but Lucy Doukas, who's lately a Boy Genius, her project with Phoebe Bridgers and Julian Baker, put out she's been doing this kind of interesting thing this year of putting out songs to go with major holidays. So she did this song called Forever Half Mast or something like that for the 4th of July, which is kind of an interesting sort of like lament for a nation kind of track. But the song that I really liked that she put out was actually the considerably lighter and more optimistic track that she put out for Valentine's Day, which is a cover of Le Vie en Rose, by, which is of course made famous by Edith Piaf. It's just kind of an interesting take on the song. You know, La Vie en Rose is, of course, this very old sort of like post-war chanteuse torch song, and Lucy Dacus kind of reconfigures it into like a you know, a kind of like modern indie rock kind of song, and does half of it in the original French and then does half of it in English. And it's kind of just an interesting take on La Vie en Rose, a song that, like, you know, I think everyone's heard a million times, but sort of to be, it does what a good cover should do. It reinterprets the original in a way that's true to the general spirit of it. So anyway, let's get into your track list. So you're number five. Well, I gotta be honest that this one is one that kind of passed me by, and both because I haven't been the biggest fan of Operators in the past, but it definitely sounds like something that could be interesting from that perspective. Okay, so my number five then is kind of similarly a track from an album where I thought, you know, overall it was a decent album, but it really didn't live up to the promise of this one track, and that's Weird Ways by Strand of Oaks off of his new album, Erasureland. And, you know, coming into this album, the big hype was, okay, it's basically Strand of Oaks, but the backing band is My Morning Jacket, more or less. Oh, no, excuse me, what am I saying? It's, it's Magnolia Electric Company's band, and, what is that man's name? That's gonna kill me. Anyway, we'll edit it in post, etc. So, anyway, Magnolia Electric Company's band coming in and backing Strand of Oaks, like, sounds like it should be, you know, sure shot winner kind of thing, this kind of boozy, lamenting kind of country rock Midwest thing that both of them do quite well. And, you know, overall the album, the sound is definitely there, but I don't think Strand of Oaks really wrote his best set of tracks for it. The thing is, Weird Ways was both the lead single and it's the first track on the album, so it kind of sets a pedigree that the rest of the record doesn't really live up to. There were some kind of formless ballads on there and that kind of thing, but this is really charging, kind of folk rock country, right in that like sweet spot of like a Tom Petty or Bruce Springsteen, but with this kind of indie sensibility, and it really builds from, you know, the beginning with just him and his voice on the and an acoustic guitar to this kind of almost sort of psychedelic swirling thing that's happening as the song builds. One that you know, set a high bar for the album that it ultimately didn't live up to. But I did want to give it a shout out because I think he when he's on and he's writing songs at the level that he is capable of, I think Strand of Oaks makes some like very affecting you know, rock music in the truest sense of that word. And this is the one track on the album where it really did come through to me. And I remembered the guy's name. It's Jason Molina. I finally remembered his name. Okay, so your number four track then. I thought it was a good little track. I do find JPEG Mafia to be kind of an interesting figure, like you say, because he is kind of almost in this bit of a middle space between the like really hardcore kind of like Death Grips or Clipping, that really fractured, really noisy kind of industrial rap. He's putting it in a bit more of a classicist hip-hop context. Like, you do sometimes get those like dusty drum sounds or like the 808 in a kind of recognizable pattern kind of thing. I thought this was an interesting track from him with Flume. I guess, you know, it just kind of came off as a little bit of a one-off and a tossed-off kind of thing. I'm definitely looking forward to his new record. And I will say also that when we did the podcast previously, I hadn't really listened to his last album, Veteran. I hadn't really given that the time it really deserves. And I think, you know, if you're in the market for kind of a hip-hop record that's a little bit out there but still has, like, the rhymes and still has that kind of thing, and also if, like, you're brain has been broken by like overexposure to the internet, I think you'll probably like relate to this guy in the way he, you know, talks about the real stuff that's going on. I look forward to his take on Jeffrey Epstein, I guess, which I assume is going to come on the new record. yeah, so I enjoyed the track. So I guess speaking of Bruce Springsteen, let's talk about this. So my number four is actually a song by the man himself, the boss himself, Bruce Springsteen. So it's Drive Fast brackets The Stuntman off of Bruce Springsteen's new album, Western Stars. Now, if you know me, I think we haven't really had an opportunity on this podcast to really talk about Bruce Springsteen in any great depth. I've kind of mentioned offhand that I'm a huge fan of him, and I am, and he's probably my single favorite, certainly living musical artist, I would say, in terms of his back catalog and that kind of thing. But I have to tell you the truth that this new album we put out, Western Stars, it's an interesting kind of experiment. He's going for this kind of like SoCal 1970s sound, almost a Fleetwood Mac, Crosby, Stills, and Nash kind of thing. Some of it works. I think the more up-tempo tracks tend to work. But a lot of it just struck me as a bit overproduced, a bit too much going on, particularly the string sections and things like that. He's kind of like over-singing to compensate for the music at some parts. Again, an interesting record, but not one of his best. But what I will say is that there are some very interesting, in terms of the lyrical subject matter, there are some actually very interesting stories on this record, and there are stories about characters that Springsteen hasn't really talked about before. Like, I mean, of course, the stereotype about Springsteen is all his songs are about, you know, the working man coming home from the factory and all that kind of thing. But he does talk a little bit about that on this record, and, you know, he's still in fine form there. But the song I picked is Drive Fast, is this kind of interesting story song about a guy who drives as a stuntman in, you know, Hollywood pictures. And really, it's this kind of like lament for the past and this lament for, you know, the time when you were great and the ability to, you know, because he is this film star, he can see his memories on screen and what that's doing to him. And the musical bed that accompanies it is this kind of like low-key fingerpick guitar, all that kind of thing. And it's one of the songs on the album where Springsteen, I don't think, is doing that over-singing to sort of meet up to the music kind of thing. Yeah, and I mean, I think it was kind of interesting. There was a bit of a sync up between, you know, movies and music this year. You could almost, in a certain way, see this as like, you know, the new Tarantino film, Brad Pitt's character in there. There's a synchronicity there that, you know, you may find interesting if you're like me. But yeah, it's you know, again, overall, the record, not his best, but I do think it had some definite highlights. This was one of them. And I think if you're into Springsteen, you're going to listen to this record regardless. But I think, you know, if you want to see where some of the more underground influence that Springsteen can have, if I can put it that way, in terms of like doing these story songs and how that style of stuff, which he has been doing for quite a while, if you look at, you know, albums like Nebraska, Ghost of Tom Joad, that really has influenced some people in a way that I don't think people recognize in a lot of ways. I think this kind of calls back to that in an interesting way as well. So let's do dispense with the Nationals' new record. I'm Easy to Find right now because it's not on my list. So I mean, I basically agree with what you said there. It's too long, and it's, you know, it's both in terms of like the track list itself, but also the length of the songs is quite extensive. And yeah, like, a lot of it is these mid-tempo kind of songs, ballads, that kind of thing. Which, I mean, the knock against the National has always been that they're this sort of, like, you know, depressive, mid-tempo, like, hipster white guy kind of music. And, like, to a degree, I think that that's a reasonably fair, like, criticism. I do think that there is more variety than people give them credit for, particularly on their best records, like A Boxer. This one, I think there are definitely some interesting tracks on it. Rylan's one of them. I considered putting the ending track, Light Years, on my track list, just because I thought that was at the very least like a very a kind of interesting, almost like clipped images, like in terms of the lyrics. This less elaborated, almost minimalist National song, which I thought was kind of an interesting twist for them. But you know, there are some other good songs on there, like Hairpin Turns and things like that. And one thing I will give them credit for on this record is that they do at least, like, try to make an effort to sort of, like, add more perspectives to it, because they there's a lot of, like, female guest vocalists that come in and kind of play compliment to Matt Berringer, and in certain cases, like, more or less take over certain tracks. So I felt that was kind of interesting as a change-up. But overall, yeah, it's not their best, and it would be disappointing if they went out on this. If you are a Nashville fan, I still think there are it is worth listening to, and you know, at the very least, pulling out those really great tracks that are going to be that are going to last in the Nashville catalog. If you're not a Nashville fan already, I very much doubt this would convert you, and I would give you a different record before this. Definitely, you know, Boxer or High Violet or something like that. Yeah, overall, like, again, one of those records that I liked it well enough while it was playing, but didn't really stick with me other than a few tracks. Okay, so my number three then, and I guess speaking of, well, I guess kind of more relates to the Springsteen thing, is speaking of ongoing concerns. So I remember, this is probably back in 2017 at this point, longtime emo legends American Football put out a second self-titled record. And in my opinion, it was not very good. In my opinion, it was kind of mediocre, and it was perilously close to like light soft rock. Didn't really have the kind of energy that their debut had. But they have decided to keep going, and they made another record that is also called American Football, which for the sake of this review or this discussion, I will refer to as American Football 3 if I have to. But I will say that this new American Football record, while it does not equal the debut record, is a vast improvement on American Football 2. It has a lot harder hitting percussion. It has a lot more fully formed songwriting. It has less sort of like, it has more kind of genuine verve and drive to it. And I will also say that, like, lyrically, subject matter wise, they are like actually kind of getting into the idea of like, what does it mean to be like a 40-year-old guy who has a kid that, you know, is writing emo songs? Like, what am I going to write them about? And, you know, what are the concerns that I have that, you know, could fit into this genre that aren't like, you know, the classic, like, you know, oh, like, my parents don't understand me, my girlfriend broke up with me, that kind of thing. Stuff that, you know, might look a little bit immature or something like that from the perspective of now. And another thing that they do on this record, actually, similarly to the National, is they have a lot of guest vocalists. And my track that I picked out of here that I think is, like, a really good representation of what they're doing on this album is Uncomfortably Numb, which features Hayley Williams from Paramore. So I think the reason I like this one out of all the tracks is it kind of melds all those things together pretty well. It is still lyrically this kind of emotional lament, but it's like colored and textured. Like, there's a line about how, you know, when I was young, I used to blame all my emotional problems on my parents, and now I can't do that anymore because I'm a parent, so I blame the fact that I'm an alcoholic. And like, so it is actually like really getting into some pretty deep, some pretty, like, you know, cutting stuff. And, you know, it deals with like losing friends and like having medical, like people in your family dying and that kind of thing. So it's pretty heavy stuff, but it's emboldened by this kind of like, there's an interesting sort of light touch to the build of the song. I think, you know, as anybody who's really into, you know, emo rock kind of music understands, the big thing is that build to the emotional, you know, punch. And they do it really well on this song, and they do a really interesting job of, like, blending the American Football lead vocals with Hayley Williams' vocals. They each take a verse, and then they kind of sing together on the chorus, and, you know, the contrast of her voice, which is like very powerful and very forthright, with the kind of more like classic emo, like retreative kind of thing, really just gives you a nice blend there. So yeah, American Football, a band that, you know, I'm happy to hear from, definitely, and I'm definitely happy to know that they seem to have moved past the, you know, let's say troubling second release. And they're moving on to brighter pastures, and I think they're doing something kind of interesting and a little bit more mature within the emo genre. Yeah, this is one where I have listened to it, but I feel like I need to give it a little bit more time, both in terms of just you know, Freddie Gibbs's rapping can be quite, not dense in an inaccessible way like LP or something, but there is more often going on than meets the eye there, you know, on the surface level. A lot of it is just, you know, the typical street themes that we expect. But often, you know, there is some more stuff going on in terms of character building and narrative and stuff like that. So I want to give this record a little bit more time. I will say that just on immediate impact, I do agree with you that it was less, you know, as the way you put it, lightning in a bottle, than the first collaboration between him and Madlib Pignato, which to me has really grown into almost an underground classic in the time that's come out, which is why people were so hyped for this new record, Bandana. But definitely, if you've been a fan of Freddie Gibbs in the past, or, you know, if you've heard about this guy, Freddie Gibbs, like, you haven't really heard his music very much, I definitely think this would not be a bad place to start for sure. All right, so my number two then is, no real way to connect this. So is, I guess, a bit of a 90s throwback. It's Stay With Me by Hachi off of her debut LP, Keepsake. So Hachi, I think we talked about her a little in the past. I've talked about her. She does kind of what I would describe as a fusion of, like, you know, ride style shoegaze with kind of more 90s alt, like a Liz Phair singer-songwriter kind of vibe. And on her debut album, Keepsake, she does that pretty well. The songs are, you know, well-written for the most part, memorable hooks. What I will say is that sometimes the production, I think, lets her down a little bit. The production for a shoegazy-influenced record is kind of gauzy and a little bit thin. It doesn't have that kind of, like, My Bloody Valentine or even a Ride kind of wall of sound that you would really expect from this kind of thing. And sometimes I think the songs are a little bit less memorable than she really needs them to be if you're going to have this less dense sound. But what I do like about Stay With Me, and where I think it is actually comparable to My Bloody Valentine, is that there's a track Soon off of the end of Loveless, My Bloody Valentine's classic release. And while I'm not saying Stay With Me is as good as Soon, I think it is very similar in that it's sort of a mashup of a shoegaze song with a bit of a sort of almost trip-hop or dance beat underneath it. And the way that she manages to use that to kind of invoke this feeling of, like, weariness and, like, longing for connection, and this idea of, like, you know, you're kind of at the end of the night and you want to be with someone, but you're not sure if they want to be with you kind of thing. And it just kind of has this quality of a bit of a kind of almost a that after-party kind of quality, I think, comes off really well on this track. And the way that she manages to take those three influences you have on here, that kind of trip-hop dance thing, the 90s alt-rock, and the shoegaze influence, and really bring them together quite well here. You know, the debut, not an amazing debut, but one that definitely shows promise. And, you know, if she can bang out some more really high-tier tracks like this, she's going to be definitely worth looking into going forward. So I agree with you in terms of the thematic content of the record. I thought was interesting, this idea of, like, encounters with, as you say, the mystical or the extraterrestrial, in some way is kind of this overarching theme. I've never really been a fan of Big Thief, and I got to tell you that this record wasn't the one to convert me, even though I think sonically wise it is better than what they've done before. I don't like the vocals is what this comes down to. You know, it's love it or hate it sort of thing. But I will say that if you haven't really grouped with them previously, this may be the thing to convert you simply because it is more thematically focused and it is more, I think, sonically varied and textured in a certain way. But, you know, it's one where I can definitely see why it's number one on your list. All right, so my number one is the best Bruce Springsteen song that came out this year, and yet he didn't make it. It's 17 by Sharon Van Etten, off of her new album, Remind Me Tomorrow. So Sharon Van Etten, I think, is somebody that, like, I always listen to her records every time they come out, and it's like, every single time she puts out a record, it's like there's one or two tracks on there that I think are amazing, and then the rest of it is kind of like, yeah, this is okay, singer-songwriter, ballady type of stuff. And this one, it was really 17 that stood up above the rest. And it's really because it combines this sort of, like 80s Springsteen, so like the Born in the USA era, of like this driving kind of, it's rock, but it's heavily synthetic, but it still has that kind of blue collar twangy quality to it, partially because of who vocals, which like do, you know, invoke sort of Patti Smith and that kind of style of singing, that really emotive, almost untrained way of singing. And then also just the, I found the perspective of the lyrics just really fascinating, because it's really a song about, you know, almost like talking to yourself in the past and seeing like, seeing the way that the world has changed around you. And the, like, she kind of uses these reference points about like, you know, I used to go to this bar down the street, but now it's closed. And, you know, and it used to be the place where we would all meet up when I was 17. And now, like, it's not, it's, you know, it is, you know, when you break it down that way, it does sound a little bit corny, but the way that she kind of really sells it, this idea of almost speaking to oneself, and this idea of like, I used to think I knew everything about there was to know about the world and how naive I was, kind of thing. And I think, you know, the way that she manages to sell that insight, which might kind of come off as trite in other hands, the way that she manages to couple it to this like really propulsive groove that the song has, and this really sense of forward motion, really manages to sell it to me. And I think of all the songs on the record, it was probably the most clear, both like sonically, thematically, lyrically. And it was the one that like left me asking the least questions, I guess, or left me like that there was something else that could have been added. This is really a singularly crafted song that I think does everything that it really sets out to do, and that's why it's my number one track. So we'll move on now to, you know, as we always say on this show, we like to move on from the negative and accentuate the positive, but you know, we always have to get the 2 minutes hate in. But we always say, you know, of course we are not saying this is the worst record that has come out this year. Thousands upon thousands of records come out every year. We can't listen to all of them. We're not professional critics. But we do, you know, there is a certain sense of betrayal, I suppose, when you put on a record and you're really anticipating it and you think, man, that was not a good use of my time. That is 30 minutes or 45 minutes I'm never going to get back. So your disappointment of the year so far, Isaac? I basically agree with you. I'd actually forgotten this record came out until you mentioned it. So that shows you about how memorable it is. Yeah, it just really did. And I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head right there. You know, as somebody who was, I kind of enjoyed Mac DeMarco's music up to this old dog, but he did have that impression of being a bit of a, you know, a fuck around idiot and like, you know, where is this actually going, kind of thing. I think this old dog actually showed like a great degree of, as you said, maturity. And, you know, the songs were more thought out and more sonically constructed and that kind of thing. And this one, I mean, I think he's confused maturity for just being boring on this record. Like, all the songs are just kind of in this, kind of almost like the national record, but without the sophistication that they bring to it. It is this kind of, like, minimal, mid-tempo sort of thing. And, like, that can work if you're going for a particular vibe, but the problem is he doesn't really have much particularly interesting to say to go with that. And the attempts at kind of being minimalist and surreal don't really congeal into anything. And this conceit of him as the cowboy, I don't really think it's fully fleshed out enough. Like, I definitely think, as you mentioned, Mitski did that whole idea a lot better on her previous record, even though I didn't think that was her greatest record either. It at least had more sonic variety and more things kind of going on. Just kind of a, like you said, kind of a wet squib of a release, one that, you know, was pretty quickly forgotten about, and I think justly so. I do recall this now that you mentioned it, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that's the trope of the songwriter as the cowboy has been around since, I don't know, at least Bon Jovi's Wanted Dead or Alive. Definitely two people could arrive at that independently, but one get it better, so here we are. So my disappointment then, and it's along a similar vein, even though I don't think it's quite as like unmemorable as that Mac DeMarco record, is the new Bon Iver record, I. Now, what I will say, and again, when we say a disappointment, it's not necessarily do I think this is like a bad record. No, not really. Like, I is it nice while it's playing? You know, there's some interesting sonic things going on with this record. Yes, there are. There's some interesting sonic textures. Again, that mashup of the electronic-y, glitchy kind of elements with the, you know, guy in a cabin folk rock with the bit of orchestral samples and stuff that he's doing is, like, interesting while it's playing. But I feel like on his previous record, 22 Million, and now on this record, he's just kind of gotten into this mode of, like, this really abstracted, fractured kind of music. And on that, on 22 Million, you know, it kind of worked because it was sort of like a, okay, let's, you know what the Bon Iver sound is like, so let's kind of, like, rip it up and deconstruct it and show you that. And on this record, even though I didn't think that was his best record, I thought it was an interesting experiment. On this record, it seems like he's trying to move a bit back more towards the older style of singer-songwriter, like on his self-titled and on Forever, Forever Ago. But for whatever reason, either the songwriting isn't there or just he's too invested in this, like, being the sonic ringmaster of this weird circus kind of thing. What it honestly reminds me of, and this will come up later, is, I don't know if people remember this, but if people remember when Conor Oberst as Bright Eyes put out two records on the same day in 2004, he put out I'm Wide Awake It's Morning and Digital Ash and a Digital Urn. And I'm Wide Awake It's Morning is still quite fondly remembered by myself and others. But Digital Ash and Digital Urn was this like weird sort of like electronic deconstruction of Bright Eyes music. And it really did not stick. There's like maybe one or two good songs on there. And it almost honestly reminded me a lot of that, of like, you know, maybe the time has come to, like, you know, just get you back in the cabin with the tape recorder, Justin. Like, I'm sorry to say that because I like this guy's music a lot in a lot of cases. But for whatever reason, this record just did not congeal to me, just didn't come together for me sonically. Now, I will be fair and say it's only been out for like a couple weeks, so, you know, maybe it will grow on me. I will give it that caveat. I do think 22 Million grew on me a little, so I'll make that allowance. But for right now, it reads as the most disappointing record of the year to me.